So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 9, titled Markandeya Rishi Sees the Illusory Potency, Text Number 13. Antar Bahi Chadhir Adidyubhi Gharaihi Andar Bahichapir Adidhubhikharaihi Andar Bahichapir Adidhubhikharaihi Andar Bahichapir Adidhubhikharaihi Shadahradabhir Upatapitam Jagat Shatarthadaphir upatapitam jagat Chaturvidham Vikshya Sahatmana Munir Chaturvidham Vikshya Sahatmana Munir Jalaplutam Kshamam Vimana Samatrasat Jalaplutam Kshamam Vimana Samatrasat Andar Bahishchati Adidyubhikharai
Andar Bahishchati Adidyubhikharai
Shadahradaphir upadapitam jagat Chadurvitham vikshya sahatmana munir Jalapludam kshamam vimana samatrasat Andar Bahishchapir Adidyubhikharai
Andar Bahishchapir Adidyubhikharai
Shadahradathat Upatangidam Jagat Shadahradathir Upatapitam Jagat Chadurvitham Vikshya Sahatmana Munir Jalapludam Kshamam Vimana Samatrasat Andar Bahichatir Adidyubhikharai Shradahadathir Upatapitam Jagat Chadurvitham Vikshya Sahatmana Munir Jalapludam Kshamam Vimana Samatrasat Andar Bahichapi Adirubhikharai Shadasahasra Upatapitam Jagat Charvidyam Sahatmana Munir Jalapradam Kshamam Vimana Samatrasat Antaha,
antaha.
Internally.
Bahi,
externally.
Cha,
and.
Adbihi,
by the water.
Adidvibhihi,
rising higher than the sky.
Kharai,
by the fierce winds.
Shadahradabhi,
by lightning bolts.
Upatabitam,
greatly distressed.
Jagat,
all the inhabitants of the universe.
Chatusvidham,
of four varieties.
Those who have taken birth from
embryos,
from eggs,
from seeds,
and from perspiration.
Vikshya,
seeing.
Saha,
along with.
Atmana,
himself.
Munihi,
the sage.
Jala,
by the water.
Aplutam,
flooded.
Shmam,
the earth.
Vimana,
perplexed.
Samatrasat,
he became fear.
The sage saw all the inhabitants of the universe, including himself, tormented within and without by the harsh wind, the bolts of lightning, and the great waves rising beyond the sky. As the whole earth flooded, he grew perplexed and fearful. It's a short purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada. Here the word Chaturvidham refers to the four sources of birth from conditioned source, embryos, eggs, seeds, and perspiration. So we will start reading because there is no big purport, and many of the verses there are no big purport, there are no purport. For a few verses, and then so verse 14, I'll go through the translation. Even as Markandeya looked on, the rain pouring down from the clouds filled the ocean more and more until the great sea, its waters violently whipped into terrifying waves by hurricanes, covered up all earth's islands, mountains and continents. 16. The water inundated the earth, outer space, heaven and the celestial region. Indeed, the entire expanse of the universe was flooded in all directions. And out of all its inhabitants, only Markandeya remained. His matted hair scattered, the great sage wandered about alone in the waters as if dumb and blind. Text 16. Tormented by hunger and thirst, attacked by monstrous makaras and timingala fish, and battered by the winds and waves, he moved aimlessly through the infinite darkness into which he had fallen. As he grew increasingly exhausted, he lost all senses of direction and could not tell the sky from the earth. Text 17 and 18. At times he was engulfed by the great whirlpools, sometimes he was beaten by the mighty waves, and at other times the aquatic monsters threatened to devour him as they attacked one another. Sometimes he felt lamentation, bewilderment, misery, happiness or fear, and at other times he experienced such terrible illness and pain that he felt himself dying. Text 19. Countless millions of years passed as Markandeya wandered about in that deluge, his mind bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 20. Once, while wandering in the water, the Brahmana Markandeya discovered a small island upon which stood a young banyan tree bearing blossoms and fruit. Text 21. Upon a branch of northeast portion of the tree, he saw an infant boy lying within a leaf. The child's effulgence was following up the darkness. Text 22-25. The infant's dark blue complexion was the color of the flawless emerald. His lotus face shone with a wealth of beauty, and his throat bore marks like the lines on a conch shell. He had a broad chest a finely shaped nose, beautiful eyebrows, and lovely ears that resembled pomegranate flowers, and that had inner folds like a conch shell spiral. The corner of his eyes was reddish, like the hole of the lotus of a lotus, and the effulgence of his coral-like lips slightly reddened the Nectarian enchanting smile on his face. As he breathed, his splendid hair trembled and his deep navel became distorted by the moving force of skin as his abdomen, which resembled a banyan leaf. The exalted Brahmana watched with amazement as the infant took hold of one of his lotus feet with his graceful fingers, placed a toe within his mouth, and began to suck. Purport. The young child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna wondered. So, many devotees are hankering for the nectar of my lotus feet. Therefore, let me personally experience the nectar. Thus the Lord, playing like an ordinary baby, began to suck on his toes. ओम ज्ञानतिभ्रांतस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Hare Krishna. So here it is very interesting to see the attack of Maya. So this great sage Markandeya asked the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Naranarayan, please show me the illusory potency of yours. So it is an uncommon boon for a person to ask. Still, he was fully engrossed in Krishna consciousness. So he had such kind of a desire that he wanted to see what is the illusory potency, what is Maya. So for him, it is difficult to conceive Maya because he is fully in Krishna consciousness. Now, he asked Naranarayan Rishis, show me the illusory potency, and immediately the Lord said, so be it, tathastu. So this is the time Markandeya Rishi was beginning to perceive Maya, the illusory potency of the Lord. So he was doing his regular worship and suddenly he could see that the sky was becoming fully clouded and it started raining, and it was so heavy rain that the inundated. So the flood started to flow. The water level increased and his ashram was flooded. All different mountains, all different continents, everything was underneath the waters. So this is really amazing, because Markandeya Rishi, being a great Brahmana, he was performing his daily duties. But at one point he could see the flood started. The rain started and the flood started. And it was completely unexpected. So this is one important point regarding Maya. That is, the attack of Maya is very unexpected. It is said, one knows that one is in Maya when one is already fallen. That fall down can be on different levels. But when one has already fallen down from certain kind of devotional activity, then one realizes, okay, I am in Maya. So before fallen, one doesn't realize, or when one is actually about to, may not realize. But when one is fallen, then by the mercy of the Lord, one could realize, yes, I am in Maya. One time, it was a morning walk conversation between Srila Prabhupada and Giriraj Maharaj. So quite a few devotees were walking near the Juhu beach in Mumbai. Then Giriraj Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada a question. He asked Srila Prabhupada, why am I in Maya sometimes? So Prabhupada, actually he had this walking stick, he pounded that stick heavily on the earth and he said, you are actually sometime in Krishna consciousness. Most of the time you are in Maya. So this is the nature of Maya. That is, we think we are out of Maya, but most of the time we are in Maya. And sometime we come out of Maya and then we see, yes, that is Krishna. Okay, we are devotees. We are in Krishna consciousness. We have to practice Krishna consciousness, etc. So this is an interesting example. And the nature of Maya is such that usually someone can cheat everyone for some time. It is very difficult to cheat all the time. Someone may cheat sometimes everyone. But Maya is such that Maya can cheat everyone all the time. So this is the potency of Maya, or the illusory energy of the Lord. And we clearly understand that this illusory energy is an energy of the Supreme Lord. It is not independent of Krishna. So by Krishna's mercy, we can think about Krishna and we can forget Krishna also by His grace. Matta smriti jnanam apohanam cha. So without sanction of the Lord, one cannot be covered over by the illusory potency of the Lord. So it is mentioned, yes, one is coming under the control of the illusory potency of the Lord by His desire. And a living entity can have that desire, but he is not independent or powerful enough to fulfill that desire. He needs the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So ultimately, a living entity is under the control, under the clutches of Maya, the illusory energy, by the supreme independence and supreme will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And once one is entrapped in Maya, then this is a situation like Markandeya here. So he forgot what happened. He was completely tossed by the waves of flooding waters. He was going through different kinds of pain, sometimes in happiness, sometimes in distress. And different living entities were attacking him, like Timingala and Makara fishes. So once we are under the clutches of Maya, then practically we are left out with choices. That is, it is a question of we have to suffer in this way or that way. It is like if you other day we went somewhere, so I was seeing a bar with, you know, so many bottles of alcohols, so different brands. So if somebody is drinking, the question is this poison bottle or that poison bottle. Both are poison. So in the same way, once we are under the clutches of the illusory energy of the Lord, suffering is guaranteed. Only question is which way. Or this way or that way. At the same time, Maya is so tricky that it is very inviting. Very inviting nature of Maya. Maya Devi, it is just like an ocean. If you have seen deep blue ocean with waves hitting the shores, it is very beautiful to see. Maybe if you go to here, you know, one block away from here, it may not be so beautiful. But if you go near Great Ocean Road, you can see it's so beautiful ocean. So from looks of it, it looks very nice. It is very welcoming. It is inviting. But a winter day, suppose we are inside that same ocean, we are tossed by those waves, how pleasurable it is. It is suffering. There is no pleasure in it. So from distance, it is very nice. The invitation of Maya is very nice, very interesting, very appealing. But being in the same ocean, when tossed by the same waves, it is not very pleasurable. It is painful. So this is the nature once we are under the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. And here Markandeya is mentioning that, okay, he even lost all the direction. He doesn't know where to go, because it is fully inundated by water. So he didn't know where to go. Sometimes it happens. Usually if you go to a pond, may not happen in a swimming pool, but if you go to a pond, it has happened for a few people. If you go inside the water, you know, you can, underwater you can swim. So when we try that, sometimes we go deeper, we lose the direction. You know, we become bewildered and thinking which is up and which is down. It is very dangerous if it happens, because you don't know where to push. If you go underneath and if you do all this kind of thing sometimes, and it is dark. It's not the swimming pool here where there is light. If in the natural pond, underneath if you go, it is pretty dark and you can't see anything. And sometimes you will actually be, you know, struggle to open the eyes because it can be a little muddy also. Then when we lost the direction, we see, oh, life is under threat. Whether to go this direction, that direction, up or down, we don't know which is up and down. We lost completely the direction. So here Markandeya is in the same position. Similar to all the materialistic people of this world. Now devotees, they don't know which direction to go. What is good for them? They are driven by the senses. They identify completely by the senses which are given by the senses. So usually we say, the conditioned being identify with the mind and the body, or mind and the senses. It means whatever sense perception come to the mind, the spiritual entity which is completely different from the mind and the body identifies, thinks that one state of the mind as happiness or distress. So it's like, it's a state. The mind has two states, the happiness state and the distress state, depends on the sense perception. And both the senses and the mind are inanimate, both are dead. But the spirit soul identifies with this, thinking, okay, this state, this is called happiness, this is my happiness, and that state, it is my distress. Both are illusory. It is mentioned one time, Shrutakirti Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada's servant for a long time, he was mentioning that Srila Prabhupada used to be very, very philosophical when he used to go to a beach for a morning walk. So one time, it was in America, Srila Prabhupada along with his disciples were on a morning walk and near the beach. And Srila Prabhupada, there were many people surfing. So one devotee asked, or Prabhupada asked one devotee, that what are they doing? So Srila Prabhupada obviously knew the answer, that they were surfing. But still, Prabhupada asked this question, what are they doing? So the devotee said, Prabhupada, they are surfing. Then Srila Prabhupada replied, they are not surfing, they are suffering. So this is the nature of the material world. They think that they are enjoying, but still they are actually suffering. So they are not surfers, but they are sufferers. So here also we can see Markandeya is having a great opportunity for surfing in the material ocean. But he himself understands, oh, this is nothing but suffering. And next, Markandeya is telling, oh, he was thinking, this is going for millions of years, countless millions of years has passed, and Markandeya is still in the waters. Countless of millions of years. So when Jiva, when this is actually the story of a Jiva, because a living entity, when he is separate from Krishna, when he comes out from the spiritual world, then it is said, anadi bahirmukh. Anadi means there is no beginning. Bahirmukh means we have turned back to Krishna, anadi. For eternally we have turned back from Krishna. So this is the condition of the living entity in this world. So there the term anadi or countless is mentioned because it is such a long time that the living entity has actually forgotten when he had his relationship with Krishna. And here Markandeya is going through the same situation. He has actually forgotten everything. He has forgotten Naranayana and Rishi, and he is completely in the illusory waters of devastation. And when he is wandering in these waters of devastation, he is seeing something, a small island. This island we can consider ourselves, while we were roaming in material world without Krishna consciousness, this island could be seen in the form of a book or prasadam or association of the devotees or temple or one of these ways. So when we were without Krishna consciousness, we were completely suffering, completely just like Markandeya. We didn't know where to go, which is the right direction. Left, right, center, we didn't know. And we considered suffering to be happiness. Then, when we actually came in touch with the devotees, that is the beginning of real life. That is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. So this island could be seen as the first contact with the devotees, in the form of a lecture, in the form of some association, in prasadam or a book, in one of these ways. So that is the hope, that is the beginning. And we need actually real eyes to see that we are suffering in the material world. Without knowledge one cannot see what is suffering. This is a very interesting point. Without knowledge one cannot see what is suffering. So we see, okay, the people on Swanson Street, when we walk around, people are suffering. But a person without Krishna consciousness cannot see that there is suffering. They think everything is happiness. People think working hard is just happiness. I am a workaholic. It is perfection of life. People boastfully say, I am a workaholic. I work from morning till night. It is very nice. And Prabhupada says, this is just like a donkey, like an ass, working from, you know, morning till night. And at the end of the day, he thinks, yes, my boss will give some grass, fresh green grass. So I will work hard. He is such a benevolent, such a generous master I have got. So he will give some grass at the end of the day. The donkey doesn't know that grass is freely available everywhere all the time. Then for further motivation, one day this ass was near his master's house and he overheard a conversation. In that conversation, donkey was telling donkey's daughter that if you behave like this anymore, this master was telling his daughter that if you behave like this, I will give you to this donkey. So this donkey was waiting for that day. That is, okay, when will I get my master's daughter? So this is the sex pleasure of this material world. So at the end of the day, one has that, okay, I can enjoy with the opposite sex. So for that sake, I can do whatever hard work is required. So this is again illusion. Now, after this, it is very interesting. On that island, Markandeya Rishi saw a big banyan tree. And on that banyan tree, there was one leaf on which the Supreme Personality of Godhead was lying as in the baby form. So there is a beautiful description of the Supreme Lord. Elsewhere it is mentioned that the form of the Lord as Kararavindena Padaravindam Mukharavinde Viniveshayantam Vadasya Patrasya Puteshayanam Balam Mukundam Manasa Smarami. That is, I meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunta, who is just lying on a banyan leaf with his toes placed on his mouth. And he's sucking that toe. So this is the form of the Lord, Markandeya Rishi. So, and he was actually completely bewildered and he wanted to see and he wanted to find out who this person is. And he actually walked towards Krishna. Now, here we can see the kid, in the baby form, Lord Krishna is sucking his toe. This is quite different from the childhood activities of a normal kid. Because normal kid also have their cute period. You know, sometimes they crawl and the parents are very happy. They take photos, they take videos and they are very curious. When they start walking, the parents are very curious and very happy. And they treasure those moments. Is that right? But at the same time, that passes very fast. You know, the life, a person may live for maybe 70 or 80 years. And how many months a baby crawls? Maybe 4 months or 5 months. That's all. How long the baby can suck the toe? Maybe sometimes, a few times. Maybe suck the thumb. These activities are for a some time and it is very pleasurable for the parents and for the elderly people. But it is mentioned that Krishna's pastime can enact in the heart of a pure devotee eternally. So they are in bliss all the time because of spiritual nature of these pastimes. So here, Markandeya Rishi was very fortunate to see this beautiful pastime. And in this regard, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions that the Lord, why the Lord is placing his toe in his mouth and sucking. The reason is mentioned, all great devotees are after the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So he is trying to find out, what is this nectar of my feet? What is the greatness of my feet? It's like Lord Chaitanya appeared because he wanted to know Radha Bhav. What is the devotion of Srimati Radharani by which she is becoming so much attracted to Shyam Sundar? In the same way, here the Lord wants to know the nectar of his own lotus feet. So he started sucking his own lotus feet. So it is mentioned why the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord is so significant, and why it is mentioned it is lotus feet. So Srila Prabhupada mentions why it is mentioned lotus feet, because the Lord's abode, Golok Vrindavan, is lotus shaped. And the Lord is residing in the hole of the lotus feet, in the middle. And when the Supreme Lord descends to the material world, he comes along with the hole of the lotus feet. And the whole lotus feet is descending to the material world. Means he is never touching the material planet or the material world. Rather, he is always placed in the Golok Vrindavan in the form of the lotus flower, even in the material world. So that is one reason we call, okay, he has a lotus feet. Second, because his feet is always touching the lotus flower. One second reason is that his lotus feet is so beautiful. His feet is so beautiful, so it is lotus-like. And in the material world, that is one of the objects which is most attractive. At the same time, great acharyas mentioned that you cannot actually compare the beauty of the feet of Krishna to any material object. Still, just to give an idea, just to give a glimpse of what it is like, it is used the term lotus. So it is lotus-like. So there are many different names given, Pangajankri, many names for the lotus feet of Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam, it is very interesting, Bhagavatam gives in the first canto, it is mentioned, Shriyo Nivaso Yasyora Pana Patram Mukham Drisham Bahavo Lokapana Palanam Saranganam Padambujam. That is, Mother Lakshmi Devi is residing on the chest of Krishna. Similarly, his face is drinking vessel for the eyes, which hankers after all that is beautiful. And his shoulders and arms are the resting place for the Lokapala of all the demigods. At the same time, Saranganam Padambujam, the lotus feet is the shelter of all devotees. So devotees are in particular interested in lotus feet of Krishna. The reason is that the lotus feet represent shelter, as well as it is humility to approach a great personality by approaching their lotus feet. So we know the great example of Arjun in this regard. The story is just before battlefield of Kurukshetra. There, Duryodhan actually wanted the favor from Lord Krishna. So Duryodhan approached Lord Krishna. When he approached Lord Krishna was lying on his bed and he was sleeping. Or he was pretending to be sleeping. So Duryodhan thought, okay, I will wait for Lord Krishna to get up. And he was looking at the Lord's body, he was looking at his feet, he was looking at his face. Then he decided, okay, I am a great person. I will stand at the face or at the head side of the Supreme Lord. And he stood there. And after some time, even Arjuna wanted favor from Krishna. So he came and he stood rightly at the feet of the Supreme Lord. And when Krishna opened his eyes, he saw Arjun first. And he asked Arjun, "Oh Arjun, why did you come here? What do you want?" Immediately, Duryodhan said, "How can you greet him first? I came here first." Krishna said, "Look, I saw him first, so I greeted him first, and I will give what he needs." So Arjun said, "Look, the battle is going to start, and we need your favor. I need your association even during the battlefield of Kurukshetra." So Krishna said, "I will give you two options. Option number one, I will be in your side, I will support you, but I will not take my weapon. I will not fight at all. At the same time, I have my whole army, Narayan Sainya. And the whole army is ready to fight. So you want me or my army? So Arjuna said, happily said, I want you, I only want you. I don't want your army, I want you even if you do not fight. At the same time, Duryodhana was more than happy. He said, Arjuna is such a fool. He chose Krishna over his army because what's the use of Krishna because he is not going to fight. Whereas the whole army there, huge in number and they are ready to fight. So both were happy. Arjuna was happy and Duryodhana was also happy. And we know the end result. Wherever there is Krishna and wherever there is Arjuna, there is victory. Yatra Yogeshara Krito Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara. So this is Bhagavad Gita. That is, wherever there is Krishna, there is victory. No matter whether Krishna is fighting or no matter whatever he is doing. Because Krishna means there is victory. So this is very significant. Why? Because the great devotee Arjuna, he took the shelter of lotus feet of Krishna. He didn't choose for anything else. That is Sarangana Padambujam. For great devotees, the shelter is only the feet of Krishna. So one time Srila Prabhupada was asked, what is the significance of lotus feet of Krishna? So this was the beginning days of ISKCON, and we can read in Leelamrita what is the significance of lotus feet of Krishna. Then Srila Prabhupada quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam and he started reciting that verse along with all his disciples surrounding him. The verse is the famous verse, Padam Padam Yat Vipatam Natesha Samashritaye Patapallava Plavam Mahat Padam Punya Yasho Murare Bhavambudha Vaksapadam Paramam Padam 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 Yat Vipatam Natesha. So the six times the Padam word, the feet word is mentioned in this verse. So the beauty of this verse is that it glorifies the lotus feet of the Lord. It is said it is Mahat Padam. It is a great feat of the Supreme Lord. Why? Because one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then there is no question of vipadam. There is no question of suffering of the material world. So even in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita, Uddhava, after hearing instructions of Lord Krishna, Uddhava places a very beautiful verse. He prays to the Supreme Lord with a beautiful verse. He says, Tapatrayana abhyadasya ghore santapyamanasya bhavadhvanisha pashyami nanya charanam tavangri dantada patrat amrtabhivashat. For a person who is suffering in the threefold miseries of the material world, I am seeing no other shelter than your lotus feet. And he says, he qualifies the lotus feet by saying, it is just like the pouring of nectar from an umbrella. So he is talking about a special kind of umbrella which can actually pour nectar. That is Dandada Patra Amrita Aprivarshat. Similarly, in the 11th canto, it is also mentioned as the Dhuma Ketu. As it's like the lotus feet is such that your lotus feet are just like a blazing fire that burns to ashes all the inauspicious desires of material sense gratification. So if you really take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, then the blazing fire of sense gratification will be removed from our heart. And what is the process of taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna? That is by following the instructions of Krishna coming through the spiritual master. So by that one can actually take shelter of Krishna. And by that the desire for sense gratification can go from our heart. So it is mentioned, there are beautiful marks under the feet of Krishna. It is mentioned, different marks which are actually there for great personalities under their feet. So one mark is conch shell, and that conch shell represents victory, and it is showing the amrita which can actually extinguish the fire of blazing fire of material existence. And second interesting mark is elephant god, or the stick which can control an elephant. So by taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, the maddened elephant of our mind can come under control. So these are possible by following the instructions of the spiritual master. Because instructions of the spiritual master are coming from Krishna, and real shelter of Krishna means following his instructions. So when we strictly follow the instructions of the spiritual master, then one can get that protection from Krishna. And in the path of our devotion service, we have to see there are five yardsticks, five criteria by which we can judge where we are at in our devotional service. So we were going through that in Nectar of Instruction. So, first one we can see the criteria of faith. Where is our faith? Is our faith very pliable? Where is it very common, very weak in Krishna? So that is one criteria by which we can see how is our faith. Do we have enough faith in Krishna? Do we have enough faith in the process? Are we thinking, oh, do I have to do this service eternally? Is this such a, you know, such a hard thing, such a boring thing? Am I supposed to do this whole life? If you are thinking like that, means our faith is weak. So we have to develop faith by associating with the devotees who have faith, and of course, rendering devotional service. Second aspect is knowledge. So we had to study Srila Prabhupada's books. We had to understand the conclusions of the scriptures. This is the second criteria. We can analyze where we are standing. Third, we can see our status in terms of our initiation, our relationship with the spiritual master. Are we aspiring for a spiritual master? Have we taken shelter of a spiritual master? Have we got initiated? What is our status? This is the third criteria. To check where we are, it is very important. Then the fourth, we can see the attitude towards devotees. A neophyte, what is the attitude? He doesn't consider other devotees. He considers himself and Krishna. And he doesn't care about devotees nor for other living entities. So when one is advancing, one has to see, one has to actually preach to non-devotees who are favorable, who are non-envious. One has to avoid the envious. One has to make friends with the devotees, and one has to show compassion to ignorant people. So we have to see where we are standing in terms of our preaching. Are we doing any preaching? If not, we are actually still on the neophyte platform. So if we start our preaching activities, then we can actually come to the Madhyam platform of devotees. This is another yardstick to measure our devotion. And finally, the chanting, the quality of chanting. If the chanting is full with offenses, that is neophyte. And if you are not making real endeavor to counteract these offenses, and if you are not putting effort in that direction, still we are in the neophyte platform. So a Madhyam devotee means he is trying consciously to avoid offenses against the holy names. So primarily we can say in attentiveness, in chanting, we are fully trying to avoid that. We are pushing our mind, we are trying to focus on the holy name all the time. If you are trying for that, okay, then we are coming to the platform of Madhyam, coming to the platform of second class devotee. And first class devotee means he doesn't differentiate between the holy name and Krishna himself. So that is a very high standard. Even before coming to that, one has to come to the platform of second class devotee. So that is, again, chanting is so important. So the five criteria we had to check: faith, knowledge, the status of initiation, preaching status, and the quality of chanting. Then one can actually come out from this material suffering, and the qualities of Shubhada can manifest. Shubhada means all auspiciousness, which is a characteristic of sadhana bhakti that can manifest in one's heart. Now, we switch from here to another topic. The reason is, today is the disappearance of Baladev Vidyabhushan, one of the great acharyas in our parampara. So we will hear something about Baladev Vidyabhushan. It is mentioned, the initial pastimes of Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan is unknown. He was a pure devotee, and he is a pure devotee of the highest order. He had no interest in name or fame. His devotional service was completely spotless. Though his early pastimes are unknown, it is mentioned that he took birth in a village near Ramuna in the part of 18th century, in a Vaishya or an agriculturist family. So this was his appearance. And in his early time, he studied Sanskrit grammar, poetry, logic, etc. And he became an expert in these subjects. And he traveled here and there, and he was searching for the absolute. And in his journey, he met with Tattvavadis, who were the followers of Madhvacharya. And he met Tattvavadis, and he actually understood the Tattva Siddhanta, the philosophy of Madhvacharya. And then he took into the renounced order of life, the sannyas order of life. And from there, he started preaching the teachings of Madhvacharya, the Tattvas, to everywhere. He traveled all the way, all the places in India, and he was preaching Tattvas, the philosophy of Madhvacharya. Even though we know Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he is known to be in Gaudiya Sampradaya. He is not known to be in Madhva Sampradaya. So there is a pastime where he actually got converted from teachings of Madhvacharya to teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is very interesting, even though Lord Chaitanya appeared in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya, there is a variety or there is difference in teaching of Lord Chaitanya. There is an extra flavor that is added by Lord Chaitanya. So even though Baladeva Vidyabhushan appeared in the Madhva Sampradaya and followed Madhvacharya, there was a point he got converted into Gaudiya, Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So this happened when he visited Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, there was a disciple of Rasikananda Pandit. We know Rasikananda Pandit, a great devotee, follower of Lord Chaitanya. And he met with a disciple of Rasikananda Pandit. His name was Radha Damodar Goswami. So Radha Damodar Goswami and Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, they had great discussion on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So they discussed Siddhanta of Krishna consciousness. They discussed the philosophy. They discussed Bhagavatam, etc. And from him, he actually heard about Lord Chaitanya. He heard about the mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And when he heard the teachings and mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, there was a change in the heart of Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Baladeva Vidyabhushan was already a pure devotee of the Lord, and he had nothing but bhakti to Supreme Lord. Still, this flavor of Mahaprabhu made a drastic change in his heart. And he took shelter of Radha Damodar Goswami. And under his guidance, he started learning Shat Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. So he became philosophically such a great personality, such a learned person, that Baladeva Vidyabhushan became the main person, the key person in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So even though he was from the Madhva Sampradaya, he came to Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, and he understood the philosophy perfectly, and he became the strong preacher of Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Later, he went to Vrindavan and he met with Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he actually took shelter of the lotus feet of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he was the one of the foremost persons in the Gaudiya philosophy, in the Gaudiya disciplic succession. So now, after this pastime, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he was staying in Vrindavan under the guidance of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he was getting older. So at one time, this is a very famous pastime of Baladeva Vidyabhushan. The king of Jaipur, in the court of king of Jaipur, there was an argument by the people from Ramanuja Sampradaya, the reciprocal succession starting from Ramanuja Acharya, from Lakshmi Devi originally. So there, all these great pundits, they started accusing Gaudiya Sampradaya as unbonafide. The reason is, there is no reference or there is no commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So according to them, for a Sampradaya, for a disciplic succession to be bona fide, there has to be a commentary of Vedanta Sutra by that particular Sampradaya. So Ramanujacharya, he has written a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It is Sri Bhashya, which is approved by Lakshmi Devi herself. She was so happy that when she saw, she appeared personally in front of Ramanujacharya and expressed her satisfaction and happiness seeing the commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So it is known as Sri Bhashya, where Sri is meaning Lakshmi Devi herself. And Madhvacharya, he has written commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Like that, even Mayavadis, Shankaracharya has written Sharirika Bhashya commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So everyone had commentary, whereas Gaudiya Sampradaya didn't have. So they said the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are not allowed to worship Gopinath or Govindadev, who are actually the actual deities of Goswamis of Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami. So they said you cannot worship the deities of Govindadev because they were in Jaipur, because all the original deities were transferred from Vrindavan to Jaipur. So said you cannot worship. It was interesting, however, the king of Jaipur, he was a Gaudiya Vaishnava. So he sent his messenger to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur to resolve this issue and to do something about this. So the messenger went and informed Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur and asked him, "You please come to Jaipur and resolve this issue." But Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said, "I can't, because I am in such an advanced age, I cannot think of travel such a great distance." You have to understand, that time travel means maybe horse or chariot or walking some distance, so it was so tedious. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur couldn't make it. But he said, "I will send my disciple." That was Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. So Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan traveled from Vrindavan to Jaipur, and he went to the assembly of all the great pundits in the presence of King of Jaipur. And they actually presented various arguments against the Gaudiya Sampradaya. At the same time, Baladev Vidyabhushan argued back and he said, "The actual commentary of Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam itself, because it is by the same author, it is by Srila Vyasadeva. And the beginning of both the literature, it is the same. Vedanta Sutra starts with Janmadhyasayataha. That is the first sutra, Janmadhyasayataha. One who is the cause of beginning, end and maintenance of all creation." Referring to Krishna himself. And Bhagavatam also starts in the same point. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadhyasayataha Anyuvayata Itaradas Charthesha Vijna Swarat. So it exactly points to the same point. It is mentioned in the Shastra, Bhashyoyam Brahma Sutranam. That is, this Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary to all the Brahma Sutras, all the Vedanta Sutras. So, as Gaudiyas, we do not need a separate commentary on Vedanta Sutra. His argument was very strong and they couldn't actually refute. So, all the pundits, they took a stand. Everyone started doubting, saying, "Have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. You don't have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra." So all of them started shouting because they couldn't win by arguments. So they actually created a scene. "You don't have a commentary. You don't have a commentary." So this was just a commotion created by these pundits because they had no arguments to put forward. So Baladev Vidyabhushan said, "No, we have a commentary. We have a Bhashya for Vedanta Sutra, and I'll bring it in a few days." So all the pundits, they were suspicious because they never knew that there was a commentary on Vedanta Sutra by the Gaudiyas, and they didn't believe that. Since Baladev Vidyabhushan said like that, they accepted it. They said, "Okay, it's fine, let's see." Then Baladev left the assembly, but he was greatly saddened. He was very morose because he didn't have a commentary, and he started praying to Govindadev. So he went in front of the deity of Govindadev, that is in Jaipur, Radha Govind, and he prayed to the Lord, "Kindly do something about this issue." And that night he slept, and in the night, in the dream, Govindadev deity came and the Lord said to him, "You must write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra and I will help you. You simply start writing. The commentary that you write, nobody will be able to find any fault in that commentary." So next day morning, Baladev got up and he was very happy because he got the blessings from the Supreme Lord himself in the form of Govindadev. So he actually compiled, he started writing this commentary on Vedanta Sutra, and in a few days he was able to finish the commentary. And he went to the assembly and he showed this commentary to all these great acharyas, all great personalities. And they were completely astounded to see such a beautiful commentary, and they couldn't refute any of the arguments presented by Baladeva Vidyabhushan. So here, it's very interesting. So he said, Baladeva Vidyabhushan prayed, he said, "May Sri Govinda be all glorious. By his mercy, he revealed this commentary to me in a dream. The commentary revealed by him is especially appreciated by the highly learned. And as a result of this, I have been given the name Vidyabhushan." So that's the reason Baladeva was given the name Vidyabhushan. "But it is Sri Govinda who deserves all credit." Such a wonderful attitude. He is giving all the credit to Govinda Dev. "Then may that Sri Govinda, who is the most dear life and soul of Sri Radhika, be all victorious." So he gave the name to his commentary as Govinda Bhashya. So it is because it is given by Govinda Dev, it is known as Govinda Bhashya. Now, a few more points regarding the philosophical contributions of Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. He could actually, even though he was initially Tattvavadi, he was presenting the Madhvacharya's teachings, then he became such a profound scholar in Gaudiya philosophy that he has written many books which are establishing the Gaudiya Siddhanta. So one of the famous book of Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan is known as Prameya Ratnavali. It has all the teachings of Lord Chaitanya is included in Prameya Ratnavali. And he is the one who actually presented the five philosophical truths. Say, when we read Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, we can see the five subject philosophical subject matters of Bhagavad Gita. Which are those? Jiva, Ishvara, Prakriti, Kala and Karma. So, Baladeva Vidyabhushan actually presented these five philosophical topics. Oh, these are the primary topics of, and we can see Srila Prabhupada has actually taken that and presented it in such a beautiful way. And we can see in Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srila Prabhupada dedicates his purports and his book to Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan for his presentation of beautiful Govinda Bhashya. So we can see this, how the philosophical how the philosophy is flowing from Baladeva to Srila Prabhupada. And it is interesting, in many of the philosophical stand, even in the commentary on Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada has followed the footsteps of Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. He quotes in many places Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. So all this, even Bhagavad Gita, many places we can see Baladeva Vidyabhushan's name. Similarly, we can see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, also in the purports, the name of Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Because Baladeva Vidyabhushan has written a beautiful commentary on Vishnu Sahasranam, the thousand names of Vishnu also. He actually mentions, even the name of Krishna mentions, he actually gives a beautiful purport to explaining the name Krishna. How is the Supreme Most Name? Similarly, when the section of Vishnu Sahasranam comes, where the Mahaprabhu's name is mentioned in a hidden way, there also Baladeva Vidyabhushan gives a beautiful commentary. That is, Suvarnavarno Hemango Varangaschandanagadi Sanyasagar Chama Chanda Nishtha Shanti Parayana. This is a section from Vishnu Sahasranama coming in Mahabharata. So, to this verse, this is actually a hidden description of Lord Chaitanya. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan gives a beautiful commentary of the name, form and activities of Lord Chaitanya, how it is included in this verse. So it's in his activities, how he took sannyas, how he pacified Mayavadis, his beautiful form, etc. So this is also a contribution of Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Then another very important contribution, he established the fact that whenever Lord appears, or whenever God appears, his female counterpart appears all the time. So he mentioned there is always Lakshmiji with Lord Narayan. So there is no question of separately seeing the Lord himself, but always there is his counterpart, his female counterpart is always present. And then he finally, in the Ratnavali, he actually concluded that of all manifestation of Lakshmi Devi, Srimati Radharani is the topmost. So he finally established the position of Srimati Radharani also. So these are the philosophical contribution. It's much more, but we cannot read everything. It's quite detailed. Now, in the 261 of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada writes about the matpara. There is a word matpara is coming in the verse, and Srila Prabhupada writes the word matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become matpara is described in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. It was the Srila Prabhupada's course, the Maharaj Ambarish's verse, Savai Manah Krishna Padaravindayo. He quotes the whole verse, how Maharaj Ambarish engaged all his senses in pure devotional service. And then Srila Prabhupada writes, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, a great scholar and acharya, in the line of the matpara, remarks, the senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. So there also actually Srila Prabhupada is referencing to Baladeva Vidyabhushan and mentions that just like Ambarish Maharaj, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan is also a matpara devotee, means a pure devotee whose only desire is to give pleasure to Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So today is very auspicious because today is disappearance of Baladeva Vidyabhushan and one can pray for the mercy of such great Vaishnava. So I stop here and ask, is there any comments, questions or corrections?
Somewhere I am not sure that Govinda Ji dictated the Bhashya to
India. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. It's not exact details, we don't know. Something like that. Yeah. He revealed. Yeah. Any other points or questions? Yes, Madhuri. Primarily, this was illusory. I can check how long it was there. It's not exactly mentioned. Was it what kind of annihilation was it? Question is, what type of annihilation was taking place at that point? Was it a full annihilation, in a full devastation, or at the day of end of the day of Brahma, that kind of annihilation, or that it's not mentioned as such? I am not sure whether the Lord showed such kind of an annihilation for His sake, or was it part of a particular universal cycle. I am not sure, because it is mentioned after this, he actually was in the waters for many years, and the whole millions of years passed, and after that he saw the Lord. Then after the whole episode, he saw himself in his ashram, and he started performing his duties. So, not necessarily that it is part of a particular annihilation cycle as such. It could be the Lord showed such a annihilation. Yeah. And it's also mentioned Markandeya couldn't see anyone else. So looks like a particular mercy of the Lord for Markandeya himself. Okay. No further questions? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Ananta Kodi Vaishnavanda ki.